This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. You've probably already heard about satirist Al Franken's new book, the book that was number one on the Amazon bestseller list before it was even published. What got the attention was the lawsuit filed by Fox News, which sought to prevent Franken from using the expression fair and balanced in his book title on the grounds that Fox had trademarked that expression to describe their programs. Fox withdrew its suit after a federal judge denied its request for a preliminary injunction against the book cover, saying the case was wholly without merit and that Fox was trying to undermine the First Amendment. Franken's book is titled Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them, A Fair and Balanced Look at the Right. It echoes his earlier bestseller, Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot. Franken was a longtime writer and performer on Saturday Night Live. He's also written humor for Al Gore. Franken researched his new book with the help of a group of Harvard students while he was a fellow at Harvard's Shorenstein Center on the Press, Politics, and Public Policy. They fact-checked statements made by pundits on the right and reports from conservative media. Franken's book includes the findings about the facts that turned out to be false. Al Franken, I want you to start by reading the opening sentence in the foreword to your book.
Okay. It's a note from the author. Although I wrote this book in a spirit of dispassionate inquiry, I cannot expect my critics to respond in kind.
Well, Al Franken, they sure didn't. You got sued.
Yes, I did.
When you found out about the lawsuit, did you think this is good news or this is bad news?
Oh, I thought I knew it was good news. There's a kind of funny story about this. I went to Italy this summer after I'd finished the book. I needed a vacation, so I went to Italy with my family. And I knew I was going to come back to start, you know, selling the book and marketing the book and going on the book tour. So, you know the book, The Tipping Point.
Right.
Yeah, which basically tells how, you know, things have become phenomenon on small little things. And so a lot of people in marketing now are, you know, it's a little bit of a, it's a cult classic. Or more than that, probably. And so I took The Tipping Point to Italy, but I didn't want to think about my book for about, you know, about 5 or 6 days. So on the sixth night in Italy, I take The Tipping Point to bed, and I'm reading it, and it's a great book, and I'm about halfway through, and I start falling asleep, and I close my eyes, and I start thinking, must think of Tipping Point for book. Must think of Tipping Point for fall asleep. My next conscious moment, I swear, someone in the house walks in and says, Al, you're being sued by Fox. And I kind of open my eyes, and it takes about a second and a half to register, and I go, good. And then I went back to sleep. And then about an hour and a half later, I got my email, and I had all the Team Franken were excitedly emailing me, saying, this is great, this is great.
And it got you to number one on the Amazon bestseller list before the book was even published. So
yes.
Now, what Fox contested was the title of your book, which includes what they say was a trademarked expression.
Right.
So your book title is Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them, A Fair and Balanced Look at the Right, and it was Fair and Balanced that was contested by Fox.
Right.
How did you come up with the title?
Well, you know, if you think of the title like Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot and Other Observations, the subtitle is And Other Observations. So Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot is sort of an over-the-top ad hominem attack at a guy who makes ad hominem attacks. So Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them is a, you know, like Ann Coulter wrote a book called Slander and, you know, The Lies of the Left or something. And so I figured I would use their kind of language. What I learned in trademark law was that lying liars, Lies and Lying Liars is called wordplay. And it was funny because in the hearing, the judge said to the Fox attorney, do you think that Lies and the Lying Liars is wordplay? And she kind of went, no, Your Honor, not in this case. This is a deadly serious title, and nowhere on the jacket does it say parody, which is like the dumbest thing I've ever heard anyone. Well, yes, it is the dumbest. So I thought Lies and Lying Liars Who Tell Them is sort of like that over the top kind of stuff they do. And then A Fair and Balanced Look at the Right is sort of the very understated, like, this is going to be fair and balanced. And it had the added virtue of being fair and balanced, you know, alluded to Fox News Channel, which is part of the right-wing media, which shills for the Bush administration, which is a dishonest administration. And that's what the book is about. So I thought it was a great title. And I knew that when Fox sued me, that this was about Bill O'Reilly making Fox sue me. And I knew my rights as a satirist, that there was no question that I was going to win this thing, and that it was just going to give me a lot of publicity, all of which was right. And so it's just worked out beautifully. Thank you. Thank you, Bill O'Reilly and Fox.
Before Fox actually sued, was there any concern at your publishing company that the title was going to be trouble?
No.
Were lawyers brought in to examine the title and to make sure that
they were
okay
after
with it?
Fox, I had this sort of dust up with Bill O'Reilly in L.A. at this book expo thing, and so. He sent a letter threatening to sue, or no, I don't know if he sent a letter threatening to sue. I think his agent or something or somebody called our publisher and said threatening to sue if he didn't take his picture off or something. And then a couple weeks later, Fox said they were threatening to sue if they didn't take his picture off and didn't take a fair and balanced off. And we hired Floyd Abrams to look at it, and he said, no, this is America. And you can do that. And actually, our publisher, Carol Barron, called me and said, Fox is suing us, or is threatening to sue us. And what, you know, and I said, okay, here's the letter we should send them. Please, please sue us.
You didn't send that letter, did you?
No, they sent, you know, Floyd sent a letter, which was the regular letter, which is, Al's a satirist. He's he's able to satirize public figures and, you know, the Fox News Channel. And this is incredibly un-American for a news organization to try to suppress free speech, all of which was true. And I thought that was the end of it, you know. And that's why I was in Italy going, must think of tipping. and I didn't expect, and then when it was an absolute surprise when they sued, because I just knew they had no case. And I know that everybody at Fox knew they had no case, but they had a star at their network who was in an infantile rage, and they did this to satisfy him. And I think they thought, well, okay, it's going to be, we're going to take some hits for this, but also our base will respond. And I think they miscalculated. I think they've taken so much ridicule. I mean, they were literally laughed out of court. And usually when you say literally laughed out of court, you mean figuratively laughed out of court. They were literally laughed out of court. There was wall-to-wall laughter. I didn't go to the hearing, but the New York Times reporter who called me for my comment just said there was just laughter all throughout.
Now, Fox accused you of being shrill and unstable, not a well-respected voice in American politics, a C-level political commentator who appears to be unstable, a parasite, and they said that you were intoxicated or deranged at a press correspondence dinner
right.
in April. Of all the things that they said about you, did any of them sting?
What was funny about this is they didn't accuse me of that so much as they said the press has accused me of that. That was in their complaint. And they said the press has called him deranged and, you know, and unstable and a parasite and stuff. So they had to put in this complaint what press they were talking about. Well, the press they were talking about came from the what we call at Team Franken the prestigious internet. Including, there were two pieces. One was from just a nutcase right-wing thing, and the other was also from a nutcase right-wing thing, which has a homepage that brags that even if you're an amateur writer, that if you submit to us, you have a much greater chance of being published than at almost any other website. So, there are so many ironies in the suit, one of which was that they presented in their complaint, they did exactly the kind of thing I write about in the book. So they'll say the press says he's a parasite, but it turns out to be some guy on the internet saying I'm a parasite. I mean, what does that mean? You know, so that's how they distort and... You know, it was clearly, you know, the New York Times said it looked like it was written, you know, by O'Reilly looking over the shoulder of the lawyer and him trying to, you know, write things that he wished he had said at the book expo. And it's just part of the ridicule that Fox took was some of the incredibly cheap shots they took in the complaint.
One of your previous books was the bestseller, Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot. How did Rush Limbaugh react to that title? Did he ever threaten to sue?
No, well, here's the real difference between Rush, and I've gained new, I hate to say it, respect. something for Rush. Because about a month before the Rush book came out, remember, it's Rush Limbaugh's Big Fat Idiot and Other Observations. I had my editor send him a copy of the book with a little note that said, "Dear Rush, Al thinks it'll help sales if you mention the book on your show." And he didn't. He was smart enough not to do it. And O'Reilly has just been, gone nuts. You know, on the radio... Like, after our thing at the book expo, he said that if this had happened 200 years ago, I would have, you know, this would have had to have been settled in a gunfight. And I can assure, like in the Old West, and I can assure you, I can guarantee you that I would beat Franken at it, and I would shoot him between the head. Which I didn't quite know what between, that's literally what he said. And one of the funny things about that to me was that how he could be sure that he would beat me at a quick draw. Because, you know, Terry, I'm actually well known on the quick draw circuit. I go to state fairs. I just came from the Ohio State Fair where I got a blue ribbon in the quick draw. Now, it's just like, and then when the suit came up, he said that this is to punish Al Franken. This is a show that you... you can't defame me and steal our trademark, and we're going to cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars by suing you, make you pay for legal fees. And, you know, now the book's number one. It's number one on the New York Times bestseller list because of the suit, partially because of the suit. I like to think that also partially because it's a really... great book, and because people know what I do. So I've been punished by Bill O'Reilly. I'm still licking my wounds. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, don't go after this guy. He really knows how to get back at you.
Well, let's get to the premise of the book. Get to the premise of the book.
Sure. I'd like to get past the Fox stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So you were invited to Harvard to be in residence there. And
right.
And you decided to turn this to your advantage for your next
yes.
book. What did you do?
Well, I've been asked for about 3 years to be a fellow at the Shorenstein Center at the Kennedy School at Harvard. And I put it off until my daughter, till my daughter's senior year there. I really put it off for that because it would be my son's senior year in high school, his second semester senior year. So he wouldn't need me at home particularly, because second semester senior years at his high school is pretty, they goof off, basically. So So I went there, and I said, what do you want, you know, what is a fellow, I was a fellow at the Shorenstein Center. I said, what do you want me to do? And they said, well, you just be here and be a resource. And I said, well, okay, do you want me to teach anything? And they went, well, no, we want you to write something. So I said, oh, okay, could I write a book about how the right-wing media shills for Bush? And they go, sure, yeah, you can do that. And I said, and you don't want me to teach anything? Well, I said, well, you can have a study group. And I said, oh, okay, what do I have to, anything? You can teach them anything, you know. I said, how about if I, the course is on how to research my book? And they said, sure. And that's it. So I got all these applications for it, and I ended up picking 14 students, 9 from the Kennedy School and 5 from the college, and we would meet every Wednesday night. My wife would, I got an apartment in Cambridge, and my wife would fly up on like Tuesday and then make dinner. So because I couldn't stand being in a classroom really, and we would have dinner at the apartment, and we just had tremendous fun, and I'd give them assignments and they'd research stuff, and you know, some I am extremely close to now, and they did a great job, and I just wanted to make sure the book was really, really well researched.
Now, you do have a chapter devoted to Bill O'Reilly, and one of the things you do in that chapter is check a couple of things that he has said about himself, mm-hmm. including that Inside Edition, the show that he used to host, won a couple of Peabody Awards, and that he grew up in
Levittown,
New York. So yeah. I'm going to ask you to choose one of those two things, which you and your students investigated. You want to go with Levittown? You want to go with Levittown?
Yeah, I'll go with Levittown. I mean, he. Here, let me open the book to this chapter because there's some funny things I want to quote in it. Okay, he has created this sort of myth about himself, which is that he's sort of this everyman who grew up in in poverty and a self-made man who talks for every guy. And in fact, he said at the book expo thing, he said, "I started out with nothing." And he told the New York Observer once, "You don't come from any lower than I came from on an economic scale," and that's pretty hard to do—not to be in America and not come. anyway, so the thing is, though, that we found an independent source who contradicted him, and that independent source is his mother. And he said, "I grew up in Levittown," which is, he had this hard scrabble boyhood in Levittown. And the fact is, he didn't grow up in Levittown. He grew up in Westbury, which is an affluent suburb. And his mom very proudly told the Washington Post that they had a very nice, affluent childhood for him. And they went to Florida every year for vacation. And he went to private school. And he went to a private college. And she's very proud of that. And as well, she should be. Her husband worked very hard. So when I was at the book expo, I said to Bill, I said, "Well, which is it? Did you grow up in Levittown or did you grow up in Westbury?" And which is really seemingly a hard thing to spin. Remember, this is a guy with a no spin zone. He said, "I grew up in the Westbury section of Levittown." And they're two different villages. It's like saying I grew up in the Brooklyn section of Manhattan. It's just crazy. And this is pattern that he has, which is he has created this myth that I think he now believes about himself. And this thing about winning the Peabody's, it was just crazy too. And then when he was caught on that, he said, "Okay, so I mistook a Polk for a Peabody," and well, he's talking about a Polk that he didn't win, that the show won after he left for two Peabodys that they never won. They just didn't know. And I said to him once on this, I said, "Don't you think it's ironic that you would get a journalism award wrong. Don't you find that ironic? And he said, go ahead, go after me. So, you know, I did. I thought that, oh, that's a good idea. Okay, I'll go after you.
Now, one of the things you did was a prank. You pretended that you were writing a book about abstinence.
Yeah.
And you wrote to leaders of the abstinence movement, asking them for their abstinence stories. I'm going to ask you to read the letter that you sent. And some of the people who you sent this to were John Ashcroft, William Bennett, Ralph Reed, Pat Robertson, Dick and Lynn Cheney, Trent Lott, Phyllis Schlafly, Newt Gingrich, Tom DeLay, Condoleezza Rice, and President Bush. So read the letter.
Well, I'll read the one that was in the book. It's to Dear Attorney General Ashcroft, but it doesn't really matter who it's to. So it's Dear Attorney General Ashcroft, I'm currently a fellow at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, where I'm working on a book about abstinence programs in our public schools entitled Saving It. In these days of rampant immorality, unwanted pregnancies, and dangerous sexual diseases, Saving It will document how the Bush administration is championing abstinence programs and setting the right examples for America's youth. The book's fourth chapter, Role Modeling It, will feature the personal stories of abstinence heroes for our nation's young people to emulate. Isn't it about time for our young people to have a chance to look up to leaders who truly walk the walk instead of just talking the talk by not having sex until they were married? I would very much appreciate it if you could share your abstinence story. So far, I have received wonderful testimonies from HHS Secretary Tommy Thompson, William J. Bennett, White House Press Secretary Ari Fleischer, Cardinal Egan, Senator Rick Santorum, and National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice. I'm still hoping to hear back from the President. I have found that kids respond best to total honesty. Don't be afraid to share a moment when you were tempted to have sex, but were able to overcome your urges through willpower and strength of character. Be funny. Did a young woman ever think you were homosexual just because you wouldn't have sex with her? Be serious. Were you ever taunted and made to feel bad or uncool because of your choice? But most of all, be real. Kids can sense a phony a mile away. I can tell by your passionate advocacy of abstinence education that you will have a lot to offer this book. Thank you for considering my project. I hope you can find time to inspire the next generation of sex-free leaders. Sincerely, Al Franken. So, I sent this out, and I sent it out on Shorenstein letterhead, which was my regret. And so
this is the Shorenstein School, the Shorenstein Center for Journalism, Politics, and Public Policy at Harvard.
Right, and I did it. I guess I don't know why, and I shouldn't have. You know, I should have just sent it on my own letterhead, because I guess I wanted to give it sort of the imprimatur of, you know, I was a fellow at the Shorenstein Center, but I was lying. You know, this is what's called a prank. This is in the tradition of satire. You send out a prank. And I got four responses, which the Shorenstein Center asked me not to print because it was based on something on there. And all the responses were, I'd love to, good luck with saving it. my boss, they're all from, they're never from the actual guy. My boss would love to contribute, but he's kind of busy. You know, he's too busy right now.
Due to
other commitments, he's not going to be able to tell you his abstinence hero story.
Now, do you have a feeling, do you think that some of the people didn't get that this was a joke?
I guess those four didn't. You know, if someone was willing to send me, I mean, I'm not fooling my readers. My readers know what I was doing. And if someone had bothered, and I didn't think anyone would, because I didn't think anyone actually had an abstinence story. See, that's what the whole point of this is that, and it's on a larger theme, which is that the Christian right really does have an amazing amount of control over this administration, or is pandered to anyway by the administration. And one of the things they pander, one of the ways they pander is by doing this abstinence-only sex education, which mounting evidence shows that it doesn't work. And that's why the, you know, National Institutes of Health and the AMA and Center for Disease Control and all these other organizations endorse comprehensive sex ed, which encourages abstinence, but says that if you're not abstinent, you should use condoms. And, you know, the I think it's the Alan Guttmacher Institute has done a study. You know, like teen pregnancy went down tremendously during the Clinton administration. And it's been shown that 75% of that is because of increased use of contraception. But these people will do this policy. This is what they do a lot. They do policy that actually doesn't make sense but works for them politically.
Do you think that right now there are comics who are being much more outspoken in their criticisms of the Bush administration than Democrats are being? I mean, you know, than Democratic politicians are being. And I'm thinking of you and Bill Maher in particular.
Well, Bill is, and Bill's always been very outspoken. There feels like there's sort of this rash of books now. Joe Connison has a book that's also on the bestseller list. Molly Ivins.
Mm-hmm.
That's
true. David Corn has a book coming out very critical of President Bush.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm sure Molly will be on the bestseller list, and Michael Moore is going to come out with another one. But I feel, you know, I feel like we're fighting back, and there have been all these right-wing books, which I actually also critique.
But the we that you're talking about are comics, pundits, there's some journalists
Joe's a journalist, Molly's a journalist.
Right, but what about, like,
but there's
Democratic
not the white
politicians?
Well, the one people are responding to is, you know, is Howard Dean, because he has been so outspoken. And I think that he's leading the way in that way. I mean, I'm not sure who I'm supporting. I think there are four or five of these, you know, top-tier Democrats who would make a great president. And I'm waiting it out, but I like many of them. And I feel like Dean has prospered by speaking out the harshest terms against Bush, because he deserves it. I mean, this guy, I think, you know, first of all, on the economy, because they have no policy other than cutting taxes, it's just been a disaster. He's going to be the first president since Hoover to not have created one new net job in his first administration. They've lost almost 3 million jobs. Between he and his father, Bush 1 and Bush 2, over 6.5 years, not one new net job has been created. Now, I'm a nut for statistics. Numbers do not lie. If you extrapolate from that, if the Bushes had run this nation from its very inception to the present day, not one American would have ever worked.
did you go through a period after September 11th, or shortly after the war in Iraq started, where you felt like, although you feel very critical of the Bush administration, and although you can even be very funny about it, that you should hold your tongue for a while out of respect?
I went out, you know, very soon after 9/11 and said, we have to support the president. And I went on a USO tour to Kosovo and Bosnia, just as the operation in Afghanistan was beginning, and I supported that. And President Clinton said we have to get behind the president. I think that at that time, we thought that we had this unique moment of national unity, which instead of Bush using it for, you know, to go forward into a new century of mutual cooperation and mutual sacrifice, he just kept, giving bigger and bigger tax cuts to the rich. I mean, he's the one who squandered this moment of national unity.
I'm sure you've been following to some extent the California recall and the Arnold Schwarzenegger interview from the 70s in We magazine. That's
right, I read that.
Yeah. So do you think that should be used politically? Do you think that should really matter?
Well,
and if so, how do you think it should be used?
Okay, here's the thing. I read the We interview, and it's on smokinggun.com. You know, I don't think that the fact that a guy had group sex, I mean, I didn't in the 70s, and I kind of regret it. You know, I was young then, and maybe I think I had the opportunity once or twice, but, you know, like an idiot, I turned it down. So anyway, I don't think that the fact that he had group sex and did drugs and that kind of stuff should be held against him. I think the fact that he did an interview in which he bragged about it like a big, arrogant jerk should give you some window into the guy's character. Because there's a big difference between the two. And then you should look, measure it in terms of his behavior in more recent years. And I don't think that's been exemplary in terms of those things. But then you should look at, is the man qualified to be governor? And I don't see any reason that he would be. And then my biggest problem with him is none of that. My biggest problem is his friendship with Kurt Waldheim, who, and maybe I'm being overly judgmental, but I don't like Nazis. And especially ones who were officers in units that massacred Jews. And maybe it's because I'm Jewish that I feel this way. But after Waldheim was banned from entering the United States, Schwarzenegger insisted on inviting him to his wedding. And he wasn't able to come in, Waldheim, because of this history. And but at his wedding, Schwarzenegger toasted him, toasted Waldheim to the horror of the rest of the Kennedy family. So I am not a big fan, as you might. You know, I think, like, if I were a Republican, which I'm not, but if I were a Republican, I'd be looking at, like, someone like Pete Ueberroth, who has, like, this history of accomplishment. And it's just sad that this circus in California is so sad, because Pete Ueberroth, you know, ran the Olympics in L.A. and made the first profitable Olympics. He was commissioner of baseball. He's a serious guy. He knows what he's like a guy you might want to have be governor when your state is in fiscal trouble.
Do you feel like you've undergone...
it's crazy.
Do you feel like you've gone through this big change in your life, going from, you know, like comic and satirist to somebody who's much more in politics than maybe you ever thought you'd be?
Well, I guess now, you know, like when I did the Rush book, it was after I'd done 15 seasons of Saturday Night Live. And at Saturday Night Live, I wrote a lot of political stuff, and a lot of it I wrote with a lot of different people, Tom Davis certainly, but a lot of it with Jim Downey, who's pretty conservative, and Jim and I are great friends. And we kept ourselves, we kept each other honest, and we've never felt that the role of the show was to have a political ideology. We felt we were representing the 75 other creative people, design and actors and writers, et cetera, cameramen. And we just didn't feel like we should have an axe to grind in that stuff. And I'm very proud of the political stuff we did on Saturday Night Live together. When I left the show, I'd always done political humor. I felt that if I was writing a book with my name, that I was able to say what I thought. And that was the point at which Gingrich was becoming ascendant and Limbaugh was his mouthpiece. So that was why I wrote Rush Limbaugh as a big fat idiot. Since then, I've written books that aren't like this. I got mad again, is what happened. I got mad again. And I think this guy, this president, has just been dishonest from the moment he started running. And I think he is dangerously putting our country in the wrong direction. So I did this book again. Now, I did learn something, and I knew it as I was doing these other books, which didn't do as well as the Rush book. No matter what, people would show up for my book signings and were begging for me to do this kind of book again. People want sort of the same thing, it turns out. So they want me to do this political satire, and they want me to be funny and angry and provide and honest.
Do you think you're going to be a guest on Fox?
No.
Have you gotten any invitations?
I predict
invitations?
Not.
Yeah?
Well, Greta Van Susteren is, I hate to say this, I hope this doesn't put her in any jeopardy, is a friend of mine. And I emailed her actually yesterday and just said, you know, regarding your organization has sued me. And I you know, she's going to stay out of it. So, no, they're not. Fox isn't going to have me on.
Well, Al Franken, thank you so much for talking with us.
Is that it?
Yeah, we're out of time.
Are we over?
We're out of time.
I can't. No, no. No, I don't want it to be over.
Al Franken, his new book is called Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them, A Fair and Balanced Look at the Right. We've invited Bill O'Reilly of Fox News to join us in a few weeks after his new book is published. Singer and songwriter Loudon Wainwright, who has written a lot of musical satire, has a new live CD called So Damn Happy, and he's on a performance tour. Here's a track from the CD. It's called You Never Phone. It's a duet with his daughter, Martha.